I would like to, first of all, to apologize to all the people, all these thousands of people out there that came here expecting to hear me talk. I tried to talk Rolf Albu into doing this for me, but he convinced me this is the way to do it. The reason that I'm not here in person is that I'm senile. I had my wife make the arrangements for my flights, and while you're hearing this, I'll be on the plane on the way back to Columbus. You know that one thing good about being senile is that you can hide your own Easter eggs. My founder's memorial lecture a few years ago, I pointed out that most taxonomic discoveries are serendipitous. I still maintain that nobody goes out with the idea of finding a new species. You just kind of fall into it. And I'm going to give you a bunch of examples from my own experience of this very thing. Some years ago, I had a love affair with the genus Zophorus. Now, I know they're not tenebrionids anymore. They're in a family by themselves. But when I did the work, they were tenebrionids. And I just happened to be picking them up on the trail in Big Bend, Big Bend National Park. It turned out that I ended up revising the whole genus based on this one species that I was picking up there. So one of the best places to collect and find new things is in other people's collection, rather than going out and trying to find them yourself. Another thing, I published a little paper in the American Entomologist called A Tale of Two Beetles, with apologies to Charles Dickens. Most of you probably read it, but it's worth telling again. The picture you see here is my family collecting at Great Sand Dunes, and here we were camping. You can see the dunes in the background. That's the next thing. I want to talk about this thing in they get the slides out of sequence, but that's all right. We found this new species in Great Sand Dunes, and in doing so, my major professor at Cornell, Howard Evans, found him originally. He was collecting the Great Sand Dunes and brought him in and said, these are very common, they were everywhere, and you may want to put them in the student collection. Well, it turned out to be a new species. This is it. Very distinct thing. As far as I know, it's found only there. We collected maybe about 300 or 400 of them in one day. And as a result of this collecting those, I'm ahead of the game again. This is the Rio Grande River as it flows through Big Bend National Park. And that's my wife and family down there. And Dick Berry, one of my students at the time, said he's going down to Big Bend. And I said, well, don't expect to find anything new. Henry Howden collected there, and Joe Knoll, and I collected, everybody collects in Big Bend. Well, he went down there, and he went through that little canebrake that you see off to the right there, and found a series of a beetle that he published a paper and named the thing Cryptadius triplehorni. Well, that's not the end of that story. Don Thomas put it in a different genus. This is the paper that Dick Berry published. And Don Thomas coined a new genus for that thing. It's a monotypic genus, Texoponium. The funny part of it is, if you're in the audience, Don, I apologize for this, but he wrote to us and asked what we thought of it, and both Dick Berry and I said, don't publish a new genus. All you need to do is expand the concept of Cryptadius to include one with fossorial legs. And well, he went ahead and published it anyway, and thanked us for our help in naming this new genus. Another experience was the ranger at Big Bend National Park, David Easterly. He sent me some specimens. He was working on, he's a mammalogist, working on a unique bat. The only outlying population of this bat in the United States occurs in Emery Peak, the highest point in Big Bend National Park. Well, he had all males he sent me to identify, and I said, David, you have a new species there, but I need to see the females. And so he said, well, come on down. We'll go up in the cave. And we got 16 of them there, males and females. And then he said, it was kind of funny. He said, you know, sometimes when a collector collects a new species, they name it after him. Do you mind naming it after me? And I said, no. So that thing is known as Eleodes easterlii. There it is. you can tell it's from a cave. A cave, I coined a new subgenus for this, cavern Eleides, because look at the antennae, how skinny they are, and the slender legs, and they have a rather modified labrum. Mentum? Yeah. And this is where I got interested in this, and Ted Spillman sent me a bunch more, and I ended up describing three species, two of which occurred in Big Bend National Park. This is Santa Elena Canyon in the park. As you can see, these are out of order. I didn't do it. This is the Texoponium paper that Don did. Another great place was Great Sand Dunes. That's Howard Weems' family and my family in the dunes. And in one night, that was the cave inhabiting one, yeah, okay. Anyway, we collected these things in Big Bend. I had about a quart jar full of them. I gotta find this. There they are. Turned out that we had a new species. There were two species occurring together, and one of them was new. I remember we found them also in Alamogordo at a gas station there, and the gas station attendant, I could hear him talking to his wife in their trailer behind the station. He said, "You gotta see what those crazy people are doing out there. They're picking up bugs coming to the light here." So that was my experience with Megacida. A lot of unsolved problems there. Then I got interested in the genus Neomeda. These are little horned, the males are horned. And the females, most of them look pretty much alike. This is a common one that occurs in the East. And when I did my doctorate dissertation at Cornell, this was what I came up with in the Diaporinae. And you can see there are a lot of changes since then. That Eulopris thing, I really didn't know where it went at the time. And there are other things. The Apsida don't belong there anymore. And this is the genus Diaporus, from which the subfamily is named. They all have horns. They're really, really unique. And some of these pictures are taken by various people. This was one of the most interesting things. There were two species, Eniopinus and Bicornis. And the only difference was that Eniopinus had red pronotum. And I got interested in this, and you can see from this map that you get down to Florida and on into Cuba, and 100% of them have the red pronotum. And as you work north, fewer and fewer of them have to get up into Canada, and they're all green. So I synonymized Eniopinus. This is the two. They're exactly alike, genitalia, everything except that red pronotum. Later, I published the Neomeda of America north of Colombia. This was recently done in the Proceedings of the Entomological Society of Washington. Number one there has the biggest horns of any I know. The one in the lower right, number four, John Doyen sent me those. He sent just a few in the beginning, and I thought the left horn was crumpled in some way, that it was a kind of a freak. Well, it turns out it's they're all that way. All the males have the right horn big and the left horn small. So I named that one Neomeda heterocera. All of them have serrae. This is one that turned out to be a synonym. I described that one from Baja California. Later it was found on the mainland. This was a cute one. I named Neomeda poganocera, which means beard horn. It's got a little tuft of seedy on the end of the horn. This was another one that left over from my dissertation. Quentin Wheeler and I published this paper, and we coined, I think we were the first people to use archaeocrypticity. We didn't get credit for it for some reason, but it's in the genus, now in Archaeocrypticus. This is what it looks like, one of the most nondescript looking beetles I know. Really strange genitalia. Quentin drew these pictures. He's much more of an artist than I am. This was the paper that summarized everything I knew about him. The genus Loxosteithes, Ted Spillman sent me a bunch from the National Museum, and I published this little paper. They're in the Caribbean. And this is the the paper. In fact, this is a composite of different things. The male genitalia are very distinctive. And later, this is what the archaeocrypticity looked like after Kassab got finished with it. Eulopris ovalis casei. That was originally described from Texas, and later on this trip, Rolf Albee was Quentin Wheeler and Larry Watrous collected these all over Mexico, and later we found it's everywhere. People probably ignored it because it is so nondescript. Anyway, Rolf Albee and I worked on Neobaphion. There were two species known, and we described it one, and later, this is the one we described. Kind of rare, we didn't have a whole lot of specimens. Mike Ivey collected these in the Dominican Republic. I had seen one specimen, I thought it was a freak, and I was trying to work it into known species, and then Mike Ivey came up with a whole series. And Otto Merkel in Budapest and I corrected my earlier work. Another interest I had was the genus Cortaceous. And this began with John Moser sending me some from Mexico and Honduras, got me interested in it. And we had a good artist there at Ohio State at the time. He illustrated all these marvelous job with carbon dust. This was the most interesting one that I encountered because here's the other one that I described later. We doubled the number of species in that one. This is the one from Idaho. This was genus Strongylium. It's interesting because Ted Spillman and I exchanged letters through the mail, and we both said the same thing. There are 10 species of Strongylium in North America, and two of them are new. And it was almost like we were working in the same lab. And we ended up, they're so out of place. This is the Cortaceous Prettyremesis. It was described by Fall from Framingham, Massachusetts, way over in the East Coast. And he had to comment in there that I've also seen the same thing from Northwest Territory, Yukon. And boy, that was really puzzling until I saw all of the Canadian Forest Service material. And you see it goes all the way across, comes down through the mountains, through the Sierras, through the Rockies. It's everywhere. It's one of the most common ones. But when he wrote that and said from Yukon Territory in Framingham, Massachusetts, that's pretty far apart. This is an interesting one. Kirby Brown and I knew about this thing in Monahans, Texas. And we sat around for 30 years before we ended up describing it. This was the one that was a lost species. I thought Casey had one specimen. And later, Broida also wrote a paper on the Epitrogyne, and he had only seen that one. And then Kirby and I kept picking these up over in Monahans, Texas, and we described it. We had many, many paratypes of this thing. Anyway, being out of line, like everything else, including me, here is the 10 species of Strongylium that occur in North America. Unfortunately, it's not in color. Two of them are pretty brightly colored. Cloudcroft, New Mexico, high altitude. I'm winding this up just by showing you a few things that I've recently described. This thing is hard to believe, but that's undescribed. That thing's over an inch long. And there's one specimen from Texas. Most of them were collected singly. We only saw one here and one there, and I named it Mirabilis because I thought it was such a marvelous thing. That's the male and female. Another pair, a lot of the Eleodes are sexually dimorphic. The males look like a skillet handle on the tail end. I did the checklist, Eleodes of Baja California, and oddly enough, I didn't describe a single new one. I made a lot of synonyms. Here's the maps we used. This was the paper. Here, I'll just run through these very quickly. You'll be able to say that you've seen all of the species of Eleodes in Baja California. There again, you can see the sexual dimorphism. two and three are male and female, four and five are male and female, eight and nine are male and female of various species. But there they are, gang, and I'm sorry I couldn't be with you. My heart's with you, and I wish you all the best luck in this symposium. And I thank Fran Keller for inviting me, and I apologize for not being there in person. How's that? Okay?